Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening. And this week, Fee and I are in conversation with Rosie Green. Rosie, you are one of the UK's most loved beauty journalists, and you're also somebody who, like me, absolutely loves skincare and wellness, so I can't wait to dive into your bathroom cabinet, so to speak. Although, full disclosure, I have actually treated Rosie, so you're also a patient as well as somebody I now consider a friend. But as much as you've enjoyed a stellar journalistic career, you also hit the headlines a few years ago after the publication of your beautifully written memoir, How to Heal a Broken Heart. We know you've told this story dozens of times before, but for the benefit of my listeners, could you recap your deeply inspiring story of heartbreak and how you came to recovery and, in many ways, reinvention?
Oh, thank you, Sophie. And yes, absolutely. I do consider you a friend and an amazing doctor. I feel very lucky that you actually helped me on that journey. So yes, I guess in very brief manner, I was somebody who was very happily married. I had two children. I had practically had the white picket fence. And I used to write a column for Red magazine called Life's Rosie. And it was all about bringing up young children and how your car was basically stuck together with raisins. And, you know, they kind of woke you every day at dawn. And, you know, it was just like really funny. And I think a lot of people really identified with it. And I had this very happy, stable marriage. And then suddenly, I think like in about 2018, I just noticed that my husband was behaving differently. But I mean, it was so quick. It was like we'd been together for 26 years. We'd been married for, I think, 12 at the time. And then he just started behaving differently, wasn't coming home from work, was all the cliches, started to smell differently, go to the gym all the time, all those things. And I was sort of panicked about that. And then one day I just discovered that he was having an affair, and literally my world crashed down. And I think worse than that was I just really struggled to understand his behaviour. He was actually really cross and angry. And I think it showed me so much that about how humans don't really react the way you think they're going to. And so I wrote a piece for Red about it, because that's the only way I really know how to sort of process my feelings. And I just had this incredible response from so many people who'd read the column, and they were obviously sort of invested in my journey, but also from so many women experienced infidelity, or they'd also experienced that kind of reaction from somebody that they thought they knew and loved.
Rosie, hello. We haven't met, but I was a reader of your Red column and absolutely loved it. So it's an absolute pleasure to meet you properly. And Sophie's obviously said amazing things about you. I thoroughly agree with your book sentiments that you can't fast forward through heartbreak. You have to walk through the storm and just know that this isn't how you're going to feel forever. I think Matt Haig speaks about this really beautifully when it comes to mental health. How long did it take before you found yourself waking up and not immediately thinking about your ex? And I guess in very practical terms, what helped you the most besides time and besides the love and care of your friends and family?
Well, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There are so many stages of recovery, but actually that sort of gut-wrenching hideousness, I would say probably 4 or 5 months, that kind of not waking up every day and feeling sick and actually being able to eat things and function as a human being. It was really useful to me to, A, connect with people who had been through similar situation, to understand that it was a pattern, really, to understand his behaviour really followed a pattern, and to understand actually that my recovery followed a pattern. So I found help. There's a lady called Sarah Davison, she's called the divorce coach. She was really helpful. I also really found help in reaching out. I spoke a lot to friends and family. It's almost like that sharing of the story, feeling they were supporting me and comforting me. And then also things like exercise, you know, the things that you can't believe really will help, but they do. They make a sort of, they're a micro gain every day. A bit of exercise. For me, you know, I'm somebody in the beauty industry. I've always loved beauty, like actually getting my hair done, going to see Sophie for some treatments. All those things, just, they might seem like they're superficial, but they were building me back up. They felt like I was investing in myself. You know, that's what really would. And, you know, a lot of reading as well. You know, I read a lot of self-help books. There was a lot of that going on. There was obviously all the sort of terrible Googling that you do that I now know your brain is kind of wired to do. You know, what does their partner look like? Yeah. What are they doing now? Mm. All that kind of stuff that you realise gives you those connections, but in a negative way. And so I've learned so much, and I feel so grateful that my journalism meant that I could get expert advice and speak to people that I would never normally have been able to have access to.
That's amazing, Rosie. And like you say, all these things that people don't really think about, also like exercise, having appointments in your diary, like a hair appointment, it also gives you a purpose. It gives you something, you have somewhere to be rather than just sitting at home, getting upset, mindlessly Googling or scrolling or looking at things. It gives you something to do to focus on yourself and to keep busy.
Yeah, and I think it's worth identifying in that situation, what is it that stokes your fire? And to me, it's going out and meeting amazing women and seeing my friends, and that really fuels me. Whereas for some people, it might be watching a movie or a kind of one-on-one situation. I took great strength from my job and my industry. And I have to say, you know, in my industry, there were so many incredible women who were so supportive. Mm. And by that, I don't mean, you know, like slagging off my ex-husband, although sometimes that was useful. But, you know, much more it was about building up and supporting. And that, to me, was incredible. So I just felt such a boost from that. I really did.
Rosie, you've been really open about the fact that you took antidepressants. Would you be comfortable talking about what you were prescribed and also what your experience with this was?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel it's really key. I always, in journalism, feel, and I'm sure there are times when I have shielded myself a bit, but I really believe in honesty. And I thought, I cannot write this book and say, yes, I did the exercise, yes, I went to see so-and-so, yes, I had hypnotherapy, without saying I had the help of antidepressants at the beginning. And I just really am keen that there is to help remove the stigma around them. So I probably, you know, was about a month or 2 months in from my world imploding. And I couldn't eat. I think I lost 2 stone in like 2 months. I just couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I couldn't focus on anything. You know, I knew I had to get up for the kids. I knew I had to be that person. I knew I had to earn my own living. Mm. I shouldn't say that incredulously. I've always earned my own living, but I knew it was all on me now. So I went to the doctor and I just said, look, I'm really struggling to sleep, actually. And can I have some sleeping pills? Because I thought that. And my doctor actually said, do you know, I think taking these, it was sertraline, so one of the new SSRIs, will really help you sleep, but it will also sort of help you see the wood for the trees. And it really did. I think it took about maybe 2 or 3 weeks to kick in, and I just could feel this sort of new level of calm. I wouldn't say that I was happy or calm, but I was definitely like 5 notches down from DEFCON 1.
It's interesting, actually, because we did an interview with Tracy T from Mums and Mushrooms about microdosing, and even she said, couched within a wider discussion around psilocybin, even she said, I think at her lowest ebb, wasn't it, Sophie, that there is a place for SSRIs when you are feeling that low.
Totally are. I think the criticism that people often have of them when they've been on them is that it doesn't just take away the lows, it takes away the highs as well. But actually, when you're in a really deep, dark place, the softening of those lows is the most important thing to do.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. You also mentioned, Rosie, that you and your ex did undergo couples therapy. How was that? Are you happy to talk about that as well? And did you learn anything about yourself?
I'd like to say it was absolutely horrendous. I remember, it's still giving me flashbacks. She had this sort of like leather sofa. I can still see it now. And I think I must have got through like 50 boxes of tissues.
I thought you were about to say 50 bottles of wine.
Me too, yeah.
That would have been good. He wasn't keen to go. And I think that's the thing that I learned. He wasn't keen to go because for him it was over. So it was pointless. Mm. And he was strong-armed into it. But I don't think he was honest about his situation and what he was doing. I don't know that, but it didn't seem like he was. So it almost, I think unless you're both in the room, unless you both want it to some degree, someone's always going to want it more or less. But it was really useful because I think it showed me, she talked a lot about how you have your own view of the world, which I mean, seems blindingly obvious now, but I didn't really think of it in this way. You have your own view of the world, your own lens on it, dictated by your life experience and by your childhood. And I kind of always thought that my view was the only view, really, and also that my view was definitely right. So I think I did really learn that actually he did really view things differently. And I think he didn't ever voice some of that. I would say, well, I think it's really key to go on holiday. And he would say, well, I don't actually feel like I need holidays. And I feel like there are a lot of money to spend on things. So, you know, and actually, you know, that's his, obviously, every time we'd gone on holiday, it was just watching all the tenors burn, I think, probably watching all his cash burn. So I think that was really useful to me. And I take that forward into new relationships thinking, okay, well, to me, a great Saturday night might be dinner with friends. To you, it might be watching the rugby, you know. So it's like finding an understanding that different people think differently, which is obviously obvious.
but also hard, because when we're in relationship, we become enmeshed with each other, don't we? And it's hard to be individualised. So I totally get that. Yeah. Yeah. Really interesting. Thank you.
Yeah.
You've written very movingly about how much you leaned on your friends when things got really bad during the breakup. Did any friendship surprise you during that time, either for the better or the worse? And how did you cope with the feeling of raw vulnerability?
It's so interesting. I'll start with the ones that surprised me. I think I've always had a really strong group of girlfriends, and they 100% stepped up. And there's a particular friend who, she lives in the Middle East. I mean, my God, poor woman. She would always talk to me. She would always pick up. She was always so calm and sensible and not reactive. But I think the thing that really surprised me was actually my industry friends, because I think I had never thought negatively about it, but I'd always thought they were kind of surface, that I wouldn't have ever relied on them emotionally. But actually that really surprised me. All these people that I met throughout my career who I suddenly realised actually I'd known for 10, 15, 20 years without even really thinking about it. That really surprised me in a good way. And I have to say, I do always say, Sarah Tomchek, who's the editor at Red,
yes.
I've been writing the Life's Rosie column, but I hadn't actually been a staffer for like 10 years. And I'd actually, at the time of the breakup, moved magazine. There was nothing acrimonious about it, but I had moved magazine. And then that position had gone wrong. And so actually, when I had a meeting with her to tell her what had happened, and she asked me to write the piece, but she was so supportive, and she didn't have to be. She really didn't have to be. And so I think that has been a real blessing. And then, you know, I have learned that some people can't help, and they can't help because they're not in the right place, or it might trigger stuff in they're feeling a bit iffy about their own relationship. Then they just can't step up. And rather than be angry about that or be hurt, I think you have to think, actually, they're just not in the right place. And then I guess lastly, there is a sort of much more superficial level of people inviting you as couples to things like dinner parties, and you quickly realize you're not going to those couples dinner parties.
Oh.
But I'm not sure that bothers me. I'm happy to just see them one-to-one, have a coffee or do something girly. So I know some people get very sort of aerated about that, but I don't really mind that.
It's also amazing how if people had seen you as this strong person, I imagine it was quite tough to be vulnerable, but at the same time, lovely to be picked up, as you say, and nested with your girlfriends. This is kind of a personal question, but I'm curious, you now have a new partner. Was it weird or scary, the thought of sex with somebody new, because you were with your ex-husband for, did you say 26 years?
Yeah, so 26 years. So really, like, I had never been on a date. The last time somebody else had seen me naked, you know, I was like 18 or something, you know. So no, do you know what? I think there's something wrong with me. I was not scared about that. I was scared about emotionally opening myself up. And I still, actually, interesting, writing the book helped me work through this. I think I had these kind of old-fashioned ideas of, like, if you were sexually available, or if you had sex, you were kind of giving away your power almost. that was your trump card to play in a relationship, so you'd keep them hanging on for that sort of thing. And actually I realized, no, that's the opposite of power. Power is having sex when you want to have sex and not being so sort of hamstrung by it. So I was worried about doing it too early within a relationship, because I felt like it would make me emotionally connect to them, and then if something went wrong I would feel rubbish. So I did, like, my he'll probably kill me for talking about this, but my current boyfriend, I was like, insisted on the 10 date rule. I don't know where I got that from, so that was hilarious. He was literally like, right, can we squeeze a coffee in at 10:30 tomorrow? So and does that count, you know? But yeah, the idea of it was actually quite thrilling. Like, I really, once I got into it, I was like, oh yeah, you know, I was sort of 45 46, just thinking, never really been on dates, I've slept with very few men, this is pretty exciting.
I read somewhere that when us women have sex with a guy, we release oxytocin, and that's why we bond with people, and that's why we struggle with being dumped unceremoniously. If that happens, it's because we've released that bonding hormone, which is really interesting. But good for you.
That is so interesting.
Isn't it?
Whereas I think, if I'm right, with men, it's that they do release a bit of oxytocin as well, which, thank God, is good. However, after a man orgasms, he releases prolactin, which a lot of people know of because it's the one that women release during breastfeeding, and it's what makes men just fall asleep.
Yes!
So we feel all lovey-dovey and bonded, and they're like...
Darn hormones, that's, again.
That's so funny. But it doesn't make them... It, I guess it makes them fall asleep, but there's nothing that sort of makes them think, oh, I must go out and conquer somebody else at that point.
No, nothing like that, thank God.
Thank God. Okay,
straight
good.
Away.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Joe.
So, next question. On your brilliant website, lifesrosie.co.uk, you talk about your post-breakup makeover. And we know you had muscle relaxing injections, you had old therapy, which for any listeners who haven't heard some of our other episodes is an ultrasound-based skin tightening treatment, and you also had fillers. Can you talk us through which of these you still have, if any, and what else you've added to your tweakments routine?
Yeah, I remember writing this piece and coming to see you, Sophie. And yeah, it was interesting. I don't think before the breakup I'd ever had fillers, and I'd been very wary of them because, you know, I'd seen them being used too much, and in this industry there's a lot of good stuff and there's a lot of bad stuff. And also I think I had been having Botox and hadn't felt I needed it. So I'd had Botox actually since my early 30s, and I have to say I always describe, like, the first, as a beauty editor, you know, I've been in writing about beauty since I was like 22. So I've tried every cream and every potion, every lotion. And the first time I had Botox, I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. But it's a bit like the first, not that I've had heroin, but I always think it's like the first shot of heroin. You quite replicate that feeling because it's so, it's just so impressive at what it does. And I also felt the same with filler. Like, you gave me some filler. I think you put it in my temples and you put some with my cheek, and I think I hadn't really understood at that point that not only is it plumping, but that it lifts and sculpts, it scaffolds the face as well. So I was absolutely bloody delighted with that. And so those two things. People always ask me, you know, what do you think is the biggest bang for your buck, and those are the things I definitely still think hold true for me.
And what about the same question, the inverse of that, the same question in reverse? What treatments or tweakments haven't really worked for you?
I'm a rosacea sufferer, and I really, with regular facials, like your sort of high street facials, I struggle because my skin does not like, you know, lots of cleansing. It certainly doesn't like hot mists. It doesn't really like flannels. It doesn't really like rich unguent creams. And so, you know, I'm offered so much stuff, and sometimes it sounds so tempting, and occasionally I'll say, okay, fine, and I'll go, and I generally regret it because my skin will flare up afterwards. So I get a bit cross with the sort of facials that people are like, no, I definitely know this is fine for sensitive skin, and, you know, 3 days later I've got a breakout that they're not dealing with, you know.
So the main treatments that you're having on the regular would be the wrinkle relaxers and the filler.
Yeah, wrinkle relaxers, filler, and I do have Profhilo in my neck, and then a sort of another skin booster called Bellaterra, is that right, Sophie?
In
my face.
So you've also spoken brilliantly about the challenges you've had with your sensitive skin. So as a clinician, where are you at with it now? It's really interesting for me to hear. And what's your current routine? What are your go-to brands and products?
I really hope that I'm going to say the right thing. This is my experience of it. So rosacea I've had for a long time. I think since I was in my mid-20s, which I think is quite early to get it. And first of all, you know, I was inundated with, you know, I was 26 and being sent creme de la mer and all these unbelievably fancy creams. And I think I always had a natural predisposition, but I think I was certainly not helping it. And I managed to sort of get a hold on it with, and it was really, it was getting to the stage where it was redness, general redness, spots as well. And just, it was really tight and itchy. And it was psychologically getting me down a bit. So I went to a few, I think the first dermatologist I went to, I had some antibiotics, which worked. And then obviously I stopped taking those after a while. And then I've been using a combination of Rosex in the morning, metronidazole, I think that's how you say it. And then I use, which I think is an antibiotic cream. Is that right, Sophie?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cream or gel.
Cream or gel. And then in the evening, I use something called Soolantra, or the other name is Ivectomin.
Ivermectin.
Yes, Ivermectin. And I think that addresses the Dermadex mites, which sort of live on most people's skin surface, but I think are more prolific on rosacea sufferers. I was also prescribed something called Finacea, which I don't use.
That's azelaic acid.
Yeah, that didn't seem to agree with me. So I use those morning and night. And then what happens is I slowly start. It's a bit like going to the hygienist. You go and get your teeth cleaned and you're absolutely diligent with your flossers for like 3 weeks, aren't you? So I'm diligent with my two creams and I mix other things in like vitamin C serums. And then I get a bit rogue. Then I start missing a night and putting, I don't know, some fancy cream on and doing other stuff. And it can take a certain amount of that, my skin. And then every so often, generally, when the seasons change, it just freaks out. So I recently had a freak flare up and I immediately at that point stopped, go to a very gentle cleanser and then just use those two creams morning and night. Don't really use anything else until it calms down. So that was about a month ago and I've been doing that. And just now everything's gone. I've got it back to normal.
There's a product we should definitely introduce you to by a brand called Sente. And for rosacea, I find I use it all the time now.
Oh,
their dermal repair cream. It is phenomenal. It's got a brilliant proprietary ingredient, but it's everything else you're using is amazing. But this one you could layer in with it.
Oh, thank you.
So for you, is Soolantra something that you can use then long term? Because I stopped using it because I thought, oh, it might be ruining my skin barrier. And I got into my head that it was an antibiotic. And then, of course, that became the big bad wolf. Is it okay to use Soolantra long term?
Well, I think Sophie could probably answer that better. I have been using it long term and I haven't noticed anything terrible.
Many people do. Yeah.
And as I say, quite often, I can then, like once I've got it under control, I can then, sometimes it's only every other day or sometimes it's only every 3 days. And it's just, I think it's just like anything. I think rosacea is one of those things that does just flare up and you just need
Stress,
to address it. Yeah.
Whatever your triggers are, every now and then it will.
The other thing that helped me was the IPL, but I was told, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, that, you know, you have to be at the stage where you haven't got the active spots at that stage for it to work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And actually that's also, even with Soolantra, people often need to calm the barrier down a bit first and then add the Soolantra in. Definitely with IPL, any peels, anything like that. And certainly any other vein treatments as well, like you can use electrocautery as well for veins. I wouldn't do that on anyone with angry rosacea.
Okay. Is electrocautery, is that like when you get use at the veins and they vaporize basically?
Exactly. It's you're using needle diathermy is another word, but where you use this tiny needle about the size of a hair and you touch it to the surface of the skin and it just delivers a little zap that seals the vessel off. That can work really well if people have got more discreet veins.
Yes.
And actually as well, Sophie, your episode on rosacea had a phenomenal response and you packed so much in there. So actually we'll ping a link of that in the show notes and ping you a link as well because I think you'll love it. And also, I mean, Rosie, you've already mentioned this, you get sent loads of products for free, which of course is a wonderful perk of what you do. But what products would you or do you buy with your own money again and again? Not just skincare, which I guess you've covered and it's different because you have got rosacea, so you have to be really careful. Things like makeup, hair, nails. And And also, tacked onto that question, is there any hair and beauty tech or devices that, again, you would gladly buy even if you were sent them for free?
Well, I think there are, certainly in hair, there's a brand called Virtue that I've always had long, thick, dark hair, and now obviously as it's getting older, it's like I have to dye it, and it is just not quite as lustrous, and it's a bit kind of puffy and strawy. And this brand called Virtue seems to really help that. It's got some kind of lots of sort of fancy keratin claims. I don't know about those, but I just do know that it really works. So that I like for hair. I really love this. I've bought about a gazillion of these flexible hair brushes by a brand called Manta.
Yes.
And they're also great for dogs. Yeah, they're so good.
I haven't tried it on a dog, and I don't think my cat would let me near my cat.
I just have to make sure the dog one is separate to everyone else's. Yeah. But honestly, they're life-changing because they're a bit like the Tangle Teaser, but they're more gentle. Mm-hmm. And I think the guy developed it because his wife had lost lots of hair with chemotherapy. Mm. And actually, I really rate those. In terms of nails, I have to say I am absolutely blown away by this new Biab manicures.
By the gel bottle.
Do you know? Yes, they're called Builder in a Bottle, I think.
I'm
yes,
obsessed
by
as
gel
well.
Bottle. Yep. They're so good, aren't they? So for anyone out there that doesn't know, effectively, they are a sort of gel. It's another version of a gel manicure, but it's more flexible. And so it takes a bit longer than your regular manicure because of the way they take it on and put it off. But honestly, I have them every 4 weeks. My nails never break. They keep growing. Mm. They never chip. It's phenomenal, isn't it? Don't you think so, Fee?
I'm obsessed. I've been having them for several years now, and my nails are in the best condition.
Yeah. So I absolutely think that is the case. Do you know what? And the more, and especially actually through the sort of breakup period, I just love things like body wash, body moisturisers that make you feel really good. I still love old school like Clarins for their kind of lovely smells. And I just think actually on your body, it's where you can really treat yourself. Mm. I'll tell you something else for the hair is this thing called Wonder Water by L'Oreal. Ooh. And it's like $9.99 or something. And you use it between a shampoo and a conditioner, and it's literally like a sort of slippery water, and you comb it through, and it's honestly transformative. It is just incredible. So I would definitely recommend that. What else do I like? In terms of machines, I do really like the hair removal machines, actually. Not removal, the laser ones. I've got a Philips one. I really rate that. I've also got this brilliant, I was always too lazy to go and get my moustache waxed. And then Venus have done this thing where it's just like this tiny little sort of moustache trimmer. I think that's brilliant. That's quite revolutionary.
Top tip. Brilliant.
Top tip.
Love these.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what else I really... I'm a bit lazy on the LED mask, which could probably really help me, but I'm always too... I need one that I can walk around in. I'm too busy to just lie there with one on. Mm. I did use the Omnilux for my hands because I always get chilblains, which actually Sophie, you helped me with. And that was helpful, but I mean, I'm not raving about it enough to say, go and spend 500 quid,
whatever it is. Yeah.
As a journalist, you've previously talked about acupuncture. It'd be great to talk about that and also any other wellness practices that you do. Do you meditate? Do you do breath work or anything like that? And what so-called alternative or complementary therapies have you tried that have really worked for you, if any? And again, feel free to plug any amazing wellness therapists in your little black book.
Oh, well, I would love to say that I do meditation and breath work, but I don't. I do actually do the classic breathe in for five, hold for five, release for five if I can't sleep in the middle of the night. And that actually does seem to work. Yeah, when I was on my sort of journey, my sort of recovery journey, I went to see Michelle Rock O'Neill, who's like, she seemed to be one of the leaders in aromatherapy like a gazillion years ago. And I went to see her and she did cranial and a bit of Reiki and just this incredible treatment, and it did feel like such a release. So I do feel those treatments absolutely do have a place, but you have to find the right person. I think it's only as good as the person you have to connect with them.
Yeah.
So I tried hypnotherapy. I thought it was going to be a man with a sort of swinging watch chain. It was not. She just really led me through my sort of negative thought patterns. and tried to create new thinking within this sort of hour-long session. But it was just really useful. As I say, I think all these things are little micro improvements. And she just really looked at why I thought that if one person didn't love me, I was therefore a much lesser person. It's just sort of unpicking all that thinking. And also, you know, if I wasn't in a relationship, that somehow meant that I was unlovable or unworthy or all those things. It was just really helpful to see her.
So have you ever tried microdosing, Rosie?
I have not tried microdosing, but I know lots of people that have, so I'm quite interested in it. I tend to think, like, I was a bit of a raver in my old days, and there were quite a lot of friends of mine who dropped quite a lot of acid in their, like, teens, and some of them have never been the same again, so that has frightened me.
Yeah.
But I do have lots of friends who've tried it and say, you know, that actually it is better than a glass of wine.
We'll send you a podcast or two, okay. Sophie, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also think there's a difference with doing it in the time where your brain's still developing. I think that's a bit different.
Okay.
Are you a supplements girl? And if so, what do you take?
Sophie, I am a terrible supplements person. I literally have a supplements graveyard. I went to the Mayo Clinic. They gave me every supplement known to the sun. Everyone sends me supplements, honestly. And then I sort of renewed, think I'm going to take some, and I just never do. I mean, I think it's because I get such, I interview a lot of people and I get a lot of conflicting advice on them or expertise on them. I guess, you know, I do take a vitamin D. And I do think I should take an omega, and I don't. And I do think I should take a gut probiotic, and I don't. I did start taking Simpro, which I think helped. But I have to be really honest. I've given people things like, I can't remember what the most famous collagen was. You know, the old one, not Perfectil, but the one a bit like that. And I really got people to try them for a long amount of time, and they all actually came back to me and said they couldn't see any difference. So I do worry about them.
Well, I mean, you look great, and maybe you're just
It
through food. So maybe, which is, they are meant to supplement to a good diet. So maybe it's that. I guess, what about sleep? Can you talk to us about anything you love that's bedtime related? So bath oils, candles, products, but also sleep supplements. I'm guessing no. Sleep apps, sleep check.
Do you know
anything
what?
At
I
all?
Did take a sleep supplement, and in total honesty, I work with them, and it was called Menomag or something. And it was, you know what, that did actually seem to work. So I did take that because I was really trying it. And I was actually very impressed with that. Obviously, I've stopped now because I'm... What do I do? I wake up at 4 a.m, so I do need to. I'm on sort of HRT that I'm sort of tinkering with. And actually, the HRT consultant just said to me that she was giving me progesterone that she was hoping was going to help a bit more with my sleep.
Progesterone's great for sleep.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm going to start doing that. But you know what? I think you're right, Fiona, in that I've worked out booze isn't great for me. I've worked out also do this great thing with the kids, like they're teenagers now, where we just at 9 o'clock, we put our phones down, we all sit in the room, we do that. I can't believe I think TV is wholesome, but we now watch an hour of TV together. And I think that just really, it just means that when I'm not looking at my phone, and I know that it's killer to ever look at my emails or Instagram after that point. So I really try not to do that.
In terms of biohacking, do you use any wearables or apps or even any daily habits that work for you?
My boyfriend has a Whoop. Honestly, it controls his life. It tells him to go to bed at 7:30. I did have a Whoop for a bit. And do you know what? I had it, and I feel really smug about this. I had this Whoop and I was wearing it, and I'd always done, like, I don't know if anyone out there's got a Whoop, but it sort of measures strain. It's like how hard you'd worked. Like, I don't know, like mine was always like really up there, and it, you know, I'd done enough sleep and I'd done all those things. So I sort of just feel like I do it automatically. And so I don't have a wearable. And what was the other thing you asked me? Was there
just over there daily practices? Obviously, exercise is a huge one. That's biohacking, but things like cold plunging or meditating is a form of biohacking, which I know we just said you don't do. Any of these lifestyle habits?
Well, certainly I try and get up and I try and get out in the morning. I try and wake up and I try and go to bed at the same time. I try to eat lots of fruit and veg. I did try to do the sort of fasting thing when you don't eat till later in the day, but I do find that really hard to get very ratty. And I've also just much more aware of my body. Like, I realized that if I had lots of coffee on an empty stomach, that was not good for my anxiety levels. And so I sort of realized that I'm someone that's sort of prone to a bit of overwhelm, a bit of anxiety. There are certain things that I know will calm myself down. I love writing a list. That really helps me. Mm-hmm. And also I just try not to get in a flap, which is my default mental situation.
Rosie, you've worked with, and you've also styled, so we haven't really spoken about your work as a stylist, but you've styled some of the world's most beautiful and photographed women. Have you picked up any tips from them?
My big tip for working with those women is never have your photo taken next to them or stand next to them, because it's very disappointing. You know what's interesting is, like, you meet those people and they were amazing people. I just saw a picture of me standing next to Catherine Zeta-Jones the other day. I was like, that was an error. But you realise they are human beings. Like, there is something magical about them. But there was a brilliant quote from Halle Berry the other day saying, people consider me beautiful, but it hasn't stopped, like, my heart from being broken a gazillion times. That's a paraphrase. It wasn't exactly that. But you realise they have the same problems as the rest of us. And actually, when I turned up specifically on the skin front, I turned up to do the shoot with Cameron Diaz, and I was so flappy because I'd been given the wrong time on the call sheet. So when I turned up, I was like an hour later than everyone else, which I did not like at all. And this lovely sort of assistant bounded towards me, cool, skinny, like just a bit scruffy, and said, "Oh, hi there." And I said, "Oh, hi." I was like, "God, is Cameron here yet?" And she was like, "I am Cameron." So, you know, it's just like, you know, without all the stuff on. And she's been open about her skin problems, and she had skin issues. And so I think it's just sort of knowing that actually they are the same as the rest of us. But also, there's a lot of people now in their 30s and 40s and 50s. And when I meet the people that take care of themselves and think about their health and think about their skin, that is starting to really pay off, I think.
And I quite like Halle Berry because she spoke really openly about her vaginal dryness during menopause, which I thought, wow, kudos to you for being so open about that. So, yeah, good one.
I love that we're all talking about these things. And I think that is, you know, it just really, I remember even the menopause, like when I was at Red, like in my 30s, we weren't allowed to talk about that. We weren't allowed to say that word. Mm. I didn't care at that time because it was so far away from me. But I now think, oh my God, we were sort of part of a system that was, you know, was colluding with this.
It's now become normalised, which it absolutely always should have been. This is quite a big question, but outside anyone in your friends and family, who do you admire, Rosie?
I actually just read Vanessa Feltz's autobiography, and she is so amazing. She, firstly, has personally been very kind and generous to me. But I also just think, I just really, as a journalist who I always really admire honesty, she is so honest. She is so open, and her relationship with men is I always just can never believe it. I say to her, you're so driven, you're so smart, you're so together, you are all those things, and yet men are just definitely her Achilles heel. She definitely feels she is not as valuable a person if she isn't in a relationship. And but what I think is, unless we're honest about these things, how can we unpick them for the next generation? So I really rate her as a journalist that I look up to.
I would concur with that. She was on the Elizabeth Day podcast, and I was so struck by how honest, as you say, just searingly honest, and so therefore so relatable and likeable as well. So yeah, I'm glad you picked her. Where's your happy place, and can you tell us when and where you were happy?
I am really happy on the sofa at 9 o'clock with the kids and my mum who lives in the annex next door and the dog. Aww. And so that makes me really happy. And I think even, you know, pre-marriage breakdown, I would have felt that there was always something or someone missing. So I'm very happy there. I have to say, I am very happy in a relationship. So, you know, we go on holiday and that is just like, God, lying on a sun lounger with your lovely boyfriend with a cocktail is pretty lovely. And then girlfriends make me so happy. You know, they just lift you up. They're so funny. It's just, you know, that is great. Being with Kiki, my hairdresser, makes me really happy because not only am I getting his chat, and by the way, Sophie, like, he is like king of tweetments. We just talk about tweetments all day. And then working makes me happy. Writing a really good piece that helps people or informs them, whether that's just like, you know, a cleanser they can get for $2.99 or whether it's someone who says, your book has helped me get through today. And actually, I'm just living hour by hour. I mean, obviously, obviously I'm sad that they're going through that, but it makes me happy that it helps.
And finally, what's the best advice you've received and given?
Oh, well, I think when I was in a breakup, the best advice someone gave to me was just like, just get a dog.
Oh, I love
my dog so much. And my ex wasn't very into dogs. Well, he was into dogs, but he just didn't want his own one, which is totally fine. The dog has like changed our life, basically. And I guess that is all those cliches that really make a difference. Like when you're the best advice, I do think this too shall pass. I just think you are in the absolute rock bottom. Tomorrow is a new day. And I love that Anne of Green Gables quote where she talks about every day is like a blank sheet of paper. And I just, that's something that I live by. Tomorrow's a new day. Might not have gone well today, but you know, tomorrow is another chance at it.
Rosie's book, How to Heal a Broken Heart, is for sale at all good bookshops and on all the usual online channels. And do give Rosie a follow over on Instagram at Life's Rosie. Rosie, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you both so much. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com, and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.